I'm Marlena, and I want to welcome you to Marlena, right here on ACB Radio Mainstream, where for about the next 60 minutes or so, we'll be taking your calls at 1-866-666-7926. Come on in, sit down, take your shoes off, give me a call, won't you? Hello and welcome to the Marlena program on Father's Day here in North America. I know Mother's Day is celebrated at different times around the world, so I'm making the assumption that Father's Day is as well. So if you are a dad and it's Father's Day where you are, happy, happy Father's Day. Let me, before I bring my guest on, just do a little bit of housekeeping here. If you're listening to this program at any time other than 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific, or very early on a universal Monday morning at 1, you're listening to a repeat, and I'd like you to sit down, put your feet up, grab your favorite beverage, and enjoy the program. I am delighted this week to introduce you to a gentleman whom I met last year and actually had the privilege of sharing the banquet table with, along with several other good ACB folks. And this gentleman served as our parliamentarian last year, and I had actually never met a parliamentarian. Don Stevens, welcome to ACB Radio.
Thank you, Marlena.
It's wonderful to have you. Now, you're in Birmingham, Alabama, are you?
Actually, I'm in a small town above Montgomery, Alabama.
Oh, gosh, you're even further south than I thought you were.
Correct.
Now, you know, I know we've got some specific areas that we want to cover tonight, and I do want to make sure we have enough time to do that, but can you tell me what is the job of a parliamentarian?
Basically, the job of the parliamentarian, as far as the convention is concerned, is to be an advisor to the president when the president perhaps needs some explanation of a particular parliamentary law or a procedure.
And have you been doing this for a long time? You certainly have a huge amount of knowledge about it.
My parliamentary experience began in 1980 in training high school youth to compete in competition, and from there I joined the National Association of Parliamentarians in 83 and have been pretty active in parliamentary circles for the last 21, 22 years.
Now, you were with us last year in Birmingham, and you're joining us again in Las Vegas?
Correct.
Oh, that's great. Maybe we can hook up for banquet or something else. You never know. I know that you have some points that you wanted to bring up, and I apologize. We have a very staticky line here. I'm trying to eliminate that here. I know that you have some points that you wanted to bring out, and let's start with let me hand you the talking stick here, and just ask you. Give me some tips. I'm a new member. I've never been at anything as big or as formal as an ACB convention, and I want somebody to hear my point. But what do I do?
First off, you need to get recognition from the chair to speak. There are usually microphones set up, numerous microphones set up in the convention hall. And you would make your way to the microphone. There will be people to help you, to assist you to get to the microphone. And once you are in front of a microphone, you would address the chair by saying, in this particular case, Mr. President. And then you would state your name, Jane or John Doe, and you would wait for the presiding officer, the president, to recognize you.
Okay.
And then you would state your business.
Okay, so if I want the floor, which I frequently do, as you may recall from last year, if I want the floor, I find a microphone, I say, Mr. President Marlena Lieberg, and then I don't say another word until Mr. President acknowledges me. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Ah, okay, boy. Okay, well, I think many of us will have to really, really think carefully here as we follow the correct procedures. Let me also give the 800 number and ask Gary, the board guy, to open up the lines. Are you ready to take some questions?
Oh, certainly.
All right. Let's ask Gary, the board guy, to open the lines. And the telephone number to call is 866-666-79. I just forgot my own phone number.
8626.
Thank you. It's really bad when the guest has to give you the phone number. 866-666-7926 is our phone number. And, you know, I think many people, myself included, you know, when you look at parliamentary procedure and Robert's Rules of Order and you think, oh, gosh, I'll never get it right. I'll never know what to do. How does a person kind of get started in knowing what's the right thing to do, Don?
One of the things is to try to get to a source that you can read about and then go to meetings where it's actually done by the book and watching other people do it that have a little bit more experience than you might have. One of the things I'd like to mention to the audience is that don't be intimidated. Be just relaxed, and no one's going to shoot you if you make a mistake or something like that. So just be relaxed and address the chair and then state your business as you would in a normal conversation.
All right, and we have a caller. Hello, caller. You're with Don Stevens and Marlena. Who is this, please?
Hi, Marlena. This is Frank Casey from Albany, New York.
Hey, Frank, are you going to Las Vegas?
Kathy and I will be there with bells on.
Oh, great. I think you told me that, actually, didn't you?
Well, we were hoping. We weren't sure, but my health hasn't been that great, but it's improving, so.
Oh, well, we'll get you all better in Las Vegas.
All right. I have a question. I know perhaps Don has been dealing with a lot of generalities, but I have a question pertaining specifically to the ACB convention. It is, as you know, when we vote on things, sometimes, like when there's a roll call vote, it might not be a plain, you know, everybody in your chapter is voting for a certain person or motion. You might have, like, for example, 4.5 votes for John Doe and 3.5 votes for Jane Doe. Knowing that each state gets so many votes, how do you figure out the voting process as to when not everybody's voting for the same person and it's kind of split? How is that figured out? Maybe I haven't explained it too clearly, but hopefully I have.
Frank, I'm really not sure exactly what you mean, but you're in a record vote or a roll call vote.
Maybe Marlena can help. She's been there before. You
well,
know what I mean, Marlena?
I know what you mean, and I'm not sure I know the answer to the question. In other words, sometimes an affiliate, for example, the Washington Council of the Blind. I'll pick on my own affiliate.
Right.
The Washington Council of the Blind. We're all pretty outspoken folk, and so we may not all agree to vote the same way on our affiliate vote. So we may cast, you know, 6.5 for this and 6.5 for that.
Yeah, I mean, how do you figure out how to compile that formula? That's what I want to know.
You mean how does each affiliate figure it out?
I mean, how do the votes tallied up? Because, like, you know, I've had a hard time figuring that out.
I'm not sure I know the answer. Do you, Don?
This was the first time that last year that I heard of split votes, and I am not exactly sure about it myself. I know that the secretary keeps up with it, and some of them even had a quarter of a vote. I'm just going to have to plead innocent or guilty of not knowing when you're in an answer to your question, Frank.
Well, I respect a person who says they don't know, believe me, and I thank you for taking my call. And maybe somebody will call in who, you know, has an idea, and that's not a down to
oh, you. No. Oh, gosh, no. And I think it may also be done by affiliate, too. I think, for instance, I it seems to me I remember when I was on the Guide Dog Users Board that we talked a lot about how we would do that, but I can't remember what the answer was.
Well, Don, I'd like to thank you for having the courage and the guts to take such a position. And Marlena, as always, I want to thank you for bringing this great program to us, because I think it's going to help a lot more people be willing to get up and speak and not be intimidated.
Great.
I've certainly looked up that answer to that, Frank, because I'd like to know it myself.
Well, maybe somebody will call us with the answer. Let's hope they do. I'd like to know it as well.
Thanks very much.
All right, Frank, give my love to Kathy.
I sure will.
Okay, bye-bye. 866-666-7926. And, you know, while I completely understand the reason why we vote the way in which we do, it does get confusing. We've got another call. Shall we bring him in?
Okay.
Hello there. You're with Don Stevens and Marlena. Who is this, please?
Hi, it's Sue from Seattle.
I bet you've got the answer.
I do.
I knew you would.
This is how we do it, and I think it's probably how a lot of groups do it. Let's just say our affiliate, Don, the Washington Council, we have 14 votes. So we look at how many people are seated in the delegation, and let's just say we have 42, so that makes it nice and clean. Sometimes we don't, then we have to use a calculator. So that means that each person gets three votes. I mean, no, you know what I mean? So let's just say that 28 people voted for something and 14 voted against, then it would be, let's see, I'm trying. Am I making my, I think I got this more confused. All right, let's start over. Let's just say that we have 42 people in the affiliate and 21 voted one way and 21 the other, then we'd go 7-7.
Right. Yeah. But then I think Frank's question was more, and
how do you get the fraction votes?
Yeah. How do you get the fraction
votes?
Oh,
okay. Well, let's just say that there were, 42 people or 38 people. So we divide 14 into 38 and then we figure out how many people voted each way, and that's how we do it.
Okay.
I'm glad I don't do that part.
Yeah. It usually works out.
Yeah.
Sometimes it'll be a half a vote.
Yeah, I think it sounds more complicated than it is when you actually sit down and do it. I mean, and I'd never really thought about the formula, you know, how, and I do think affiliates decide how they're going to do it prior to convention.
They do, but yeah. I think, I'm guessing that pretty much this is how people do it.
Yeah.
I'm certainly glad that question went on any of my polymer tests that I had to take.
I know it is a little confusing. So, I think the main thing is, at least for most of us, we're just dead set against the unit rule kind of thing.
Yeah, we want to make sure that every voice has its vote.
One person, one vote.
And that's why we hope that all the people that, you know, come to convention are there so that we can have their vote. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, and really, folks, not that it is my lot in life to tell people what to do, but I really hope folks are planning not to leave until Saturday afternoon, because you just don't know.
Well, I mean, even during the voting, I mean, if you remember, was it last year or the year before? I mean, some of the officers were decided by 3 or 4 votes.
Yeah.
So. If you leave to go to the bathroom, you know, those long elections can make you kind of jump up and down, but you try to stay.
Yeah. All right.
Marlena, you made a point there that I would like to follow up on, and that was that you're not trying to tell anybody how to conduct themselves in convention, and I'm not either, really. I'm just trying to get some standardization here and tell them something that would help them to participate a little more effectively and possibly to better understand what's going on during the business sessions.
Yeah, and I think that's important. And I think, you know, Sue, I know, works very hard to, as the membership committee chair for ACB, to bring new people in and make new people feel included. And we have the ACB first timers gatherings and so forth at the convention. And I just think that this organization was built on the principles of democracy. And that does mean that we want to hear every voice. We want, you know, every person to have a vote. And so I think that this is good prior
to... And I think it's, you know, one of the things that I really get annoyed with sometimes, and I think we've seen this in some years, where people use parliamentary procedure, you know, if they understand it and other people don't, to try to shut down discussion or a vote. And that's something that I don't like.
Yeah.
That was one of my calling out question from your seat and not calling out the correct motion to get a vote on down debate.
So,
and, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
I look at that as a slight problem, and in particular for the presiding officer, when members are just calling question from their seat, and which actually in old time it meant I'm ready to vote, or let's cut down debate. But technically, if you want to cut debate off, if you think debate has gone long enough and you want to move it to a vote, you would go to a microphone and address the chair like we talked about, get your recognition, and say, I move the previous question, or I call for the question. And that way, someone would second that, and then you would have a vote. It would take a two-thirds vote to adopt that motion, and if that motion is adopted, then debate will cease, and you would go right into a vote on the main question before the assembly at that time.
All right. All right. Anything else, Sue?
Well, I have a question to put you on the spot, Don.
Yes, sir.
You know, in our Constitution, we do say that we do have a quorum, and I can't remember exactly now what it is. I think it's
20%.
It's complicated.
But we often have met on Saturday morning where the room is almost empty. And I guess, you know, there have been people who have stood up and said we should stop voting because the quorum isn't there.
Yes.
And I sort of have mixed feelings because I feel like if people leave, the rest of us shouldn't be penalized. So I wonder what your thoughts are.
Well, I will be working with the Bylaws and Constitution Committee when I get to Las Vegas. And I understand that this may be addressed. There may be a proposed amendment to make the quorum definition a little bit more understandable. But in the situation, and there was a challenge to a quorum toward the end of this on Saturday morning. And the way that it was proven whether or not there was a quorum is by a roll call vote was taken. And when you added up the number of ayes and noes, or the number that stood for or stood against, and then you took that number and added to the state affiliate votes and the special interest affiliate votes, you had something like 700 and something votes. And then when you took a majority of all of that, the registration and everything else that the current bylaws state that as far as a quorum, you had 500 and something, so you had more than 200 excess than as far as a quorum. So a quorum was there, but I think that it probably could be a little bit clearer in the Constitution exactly how you figure the quorum.
Well, that'll give us something more to debate, won't it?
Pardon?
I said that'll give us something more to debate.
That's correct.
So we might be there till Saturday afternoon now.
That's right.
I hope not.
Yeah, me too. But all right. Well, luckily I hear my dinner being put on the table, so I'm going to go.
All right. Well, thanks for calling in with the answer to at least how we do it. I knew that we did some. We had, you know, a formula something like that, but I wasn't quite sure.
Well, the first year that I was president of WCB, I did get a little confused, but we finally got it down.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you always had to go through and count how many people were there each vote, so it could, you know, it could make a difference.
Yeah, it is confusing.
Thanks, Marlena. Thanks.
The main thing as far as a quorum is that you have a representative number of people there. You don't want a very small group of people to be deciding issues for thousands of people.
That's right.
They are representing people back home, and that counts. And so, if you have a representative group there, I believe you're okay in deciding issues.
Hello, you're with Don Stevens and Marlena. Who's
this? Hi there, Marlena. I'm going to have to turn down my my speakers here.
Okay.
Let me turn down my speakers on
All
my
right.
computer.
I know this voice. It's Charlie Hodge.
That's correct. That's correct. And I'm trying to find where my speaker is that has the controls on it. The point I was going to try to make for Don is I think Robert's Rules of Order, if it is used properly, is not a way of creating parliamentary snares or technicalities to thwart the will of the assembly. It's intended to be an orderly way of ordering business and the priorities of motions so that the assembly can work its will, can work through points of order, other points of inquiry, and so forth, and get to a final vote. And some of these things, like moving the previous question, can cut off debate, but they require a supermajority or a two-thirds vote. So that, I think, protects the minority. The general rule is that when people yell, call for the question, if there are people still seeking recognition, generally the presiding officer should ignore calls for question until somebody actually says the magic words, gets recognition and says, I move the previous question. So I think as long as there are people seeking recognition and wanting to speak, I think Don has expressed correctly that debate should go on until actually somebody makes the proper motion.
You know, Charlie, and I'm sure Don's going to step in and say something here, but I have a question for you.
Yeah.
As you probably read in the promotion of this particular program, I made a statement like, we want to not have new people feeling inhibited, and some of us old timers may follow tradition more than Robert's rules at times. For years, it's just been call the question, and that's what happened. How do we get this information out to the folks present at convention that, yeah, maybe things are going to be a little different this year? What do you think about that?
Well, I think it's possible. I believe that Don was thinking in terms of maybe writing a short piece that could be put out just as an article for informational purposes about some of the major issues that tend to crop up, like ending debate. And so forth. And also, I think Don may speak, at least briefly, at some of the first-timer meetings.
Oh, that would be great.
To tell people what to expect and what the norms are on some of these things. It is true that ACB, because of our rich tradition, even going back into the Great Civil War and the NFB, has customs and traditions. But it's fairly clear that since we've designated Robert's Rules as our parliamentary authority, that where Robert's Rules speaks to things, Robert's will take precedent over our custom and practice. We are very rich in customs, and I think all too often sometimes we rely on custom and tradition and practice rather than actually instituting these as policies. One of the things that I think Don favors, and Don can speak for this for himself, is that we have a motion or a resolution offered at the beginning of the convention to establish convention rules. But a lot of people, particularly amongst the old charter members, would say, that's pernicious, because we face that in the NFB, where at the beginning of each convention, there were convention rules instituted on us, such as the Booth Resolution at the NFB's Albuquerque Convention in 1959. And therefore, that would limit our debate and limit our speech. And some of the people I know favor, for instance, there was a general agreement that was adopted by unanimous consent at the president's request last year that speeches be limited to basically 10 minutes, 5 2-minute speeches for and 5 2-minute speeches against any proposition. But that smacks very much of the old NFB rule under the Booth Resolution that said the debate would be limited to 3 3-minute speeches for and 3 3-minute speeches against any proposition. And I think the question that would be posed to the chair as a point of parliamentary inquiry or clarification would be, before we limit ourselves in debate in this manner, we'd like to know what we're going to be talking about.
Don, do you have a thought about that, Don?
Charles is correct in the sense of you want to open debate more widely. You don't want to limit it. And we do have some, I understand we have some standing rules that are going to be presented to the board of directors for refinement. Then those will be offered to the assembly very early in the convention for a vote. And I believe that the members will see that those are intended to help business move along effectively and not at all curtail members' rights to speak and the time limits on debate. As far as individuals are concerned, we may have a time limit on a total issue, but then we don't want to limit individuals as far as their time is concerned.
All right. All right. Thanks, Charlie. I appreciate the call.
Right. One last thing.
Sure.
We do have provisions in our bylaws, for instance, on credentials under Article 6, Section C, where if an appeal is taken from a ruling of the Credentials Committee, it provides for 10 minutes for the appellants to present their testimony or case, and 10 minutes for the committee to present its reasoning for the ruling it made. And so we do have a precedent of holding debate on credentials appeals to 10 minutes for each side. So that's a provision that people should be aware of.
Yeah.
And I believe there's also a custom or tradition to limit the amount of nominating speeches the candidate may allocate the time that is allowed to his nominating individuals or seconding speeches.
Yeah, 5 minutes total between nominator and seconder.
The rules are not to basically the standing rules that are going to be presented are those that are not trying to tear up custom or tradition, but to support it. Because some of the customs and tradition, as Charles mentioned, are against Robert's Rules of Order. And when that happens, you need to adopt a standing rule that would allow you to do your custom and not run into a situation where someone is going to call a point of order and say, Robert says you can't do this. So if you adopt a standing rule, okay, in the particular procedure, then you're home safe, and for that particular convention, you can continue your custom and your tradition.
All right.
Right. Thanks.
Thanks, Charlie. See you in a couple of weeks.
All right. Thanks, Charlie.
866-666-7926. So I'm sitting at my delegation, and we'll take this question because the caller's questions are more important than mine. Hi there. You're with Don Stevens and Marlena. Who's this, please?
Hello. This is Margaret Johnson.
Hello, Margaret. How are you?
From Arkansas, and I was trying to call back on this situation about the percentage vote.
Yes, uh-huh.
And I'm not, I'm really trying to do this because I'm supposed to be an alternate delegate from Arkansas, and it has to do with however many votes you're allowed, in your state. Then you go down your row and you figure out how many people want to vote for which thing. Which office. And then you take that percentage, of your allowed votes. You know, like if half the people, if you have six votes and half your, people present want to vote for one person and one another, then it'd be like, 3-3. Or if it's, you know, and then you have to go into, you know, the, like if it comes out 3.5, then you have to go, you know, 3.5 and 2.5 or something like that. 3.5 and 2.5 and stuff. But it has to do with that, and that's the best way I understand it. And, I thought Charlie Hodge was going to handle this when he called. And I've been trying to make Dick Seifert call in there and tell you because he really understands it.
Marta, would you like to teach a class?
So I don't know.
It's a convention. I'll be one of your first students.
Yeah, I really think that it does boil down to how your affiliate works it out. For example, some affiliates will agree ahead of time, as I understand it, that they won't have split votes. So if it's 4-3, it's not going to be a split vote, if you know what I'm saying. And other affiliates decide, yeah, we're going to split our votes and do all this crazy math, and then we'll report the vote in fractions. So as I understand it, and I am by no means, this is not my forte, but as I understand it, it is up to the individual affiliate how they want to present their affiliate vote. And I would love it if someone would call in and say, you are wrong or you are right. Because I think
Has to do, it's a math formula. And the thing about it is, you got to be quick on your feet. Like if you're from one of the first states, you know, like
right.
Arkansas is one of the first ones. I mean, it's you need a mathematician to, you know.
You need a good calculator, Margaret.
Yeah, you sure do. Because Dick Seifert was trying to tell me how to do it, and he said, oh, you took too much time. They've already called Arkansas. You need to get faster on this.
Yeah.
So,
all right. Well,
I wish he would call in, but his phone's tied up. Maybe he's trying to call.
Well,
in.
You never
so.
Know. All right. Well, thank you so much, Margaret, and see you in a couple of weeks.
I'm looking forward
all
to
right,
it.
All right. Look
and
me up.
Hi to Charlie Hodge, too.
All right. And look me up. I'd love to meet you.
All right.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Marlena, a question on procedure within the program. When someone's on the line, like Margaret, someone else calls in, is it busy signal?
Yes,
come up?
Yes,
okay.
they get a busy signal.
Okay.
And we have another call. Hi there, you're with Don Stevens and Marlena. Who's this?
Hi, this is Joe Hartz. How are you both tonight?
Hello, Joe.
Oh, boy. I've got carpal tunnel from trying to dial through. Forgive me both if I cover some areas that you've already talked about, but I don't have the capability to both listen and call through. I'm on a dial-in. But I have several questions, and one is, how do we remedy procedural errors that have happened in the past? And I'm specifically thinking about 2 years ago where there was an amendment to change the structure of the Board of Publications. It failed on a faulty ruling by the president. As it garnered 49.99% of the vote, the abstentions were tallied into the total, which I believe Mr. Stevens said is not kosher at last convention. But you know, how do you remedy something that happened at a convention 2 years ago? The second question is, I had several motions. Or several bylaw and constitutional amendments that never got a second reading in spite of the Constitution saying that all amendments have to be put to the floor, and the convention was adjourned, which, you know, my question in that regard is, does not the Constitution and our own specific laws trump Robert's Rules of Order in that case?
Okay, so let me just be clear. The first question is regarding how do you go back and revisit, or as your word was, remedy something that happened two conventions ago, and then now you're talking about what happened at last year's convention, right?
Correct.
Okay.
And with that one, I want a clarification if abstentions get counted in the tally. If you take those two.
Yeah, let
me address the number one for Joe on the appeal, on the issue of your first issue, Joe, was how do you remedy something that has gone wrong, basically. Is that correct?
Correct. In a faulty ruling.
Okay.
If the error that has occurred is against federal law, state law, your own constitution, or your bylaws, then you call a point of order. And some of these points of order, if they relate to those items I just mentioned, it's never too late to call the point of order. But if it's a ruling by the president, based upon information probably given to them by the parliamentarian, you can appeal the decision of the chair.
It was appealed, and people can roll back the tapes on ACB radio. A point of order was made, and the president ruled that point of order out of order.
And then was there an appeal to that?
No, it just went on and stood as it was, but that goes to the issue of counting abstentions in the aggregate of the vote.
Okay, well, what I'm trying to say is that one of two things. Either the you appeal and then have to live by the process of the appeal. Either you win the appeal or you don't win the appeal, and then it's over with. And as far as the abstentions, this gets very complicated. But I'd like to have some time with you out at the convention. But I will try to make this brief as I can.
Mm-hmm.
In the situation of ACB, as far as the ruling about abstentions that I ruled last year, your bylaws state that voting is a majority of those present in voting. That's what your bylaws state.
Correct.
Robert's Rules of Order, in saying what a majority vote is almost the same thing. It says that those present in voting, and it's a majority of those present in voting, and it excludes blanks and abstentions. Now, the word that's key here is what's called qualified. Robert's Rules is an unqualified vote. Your bylaws and constitution is an unqualified vote. That's how it's defined. And then if an organization has something different in their bylaws or their constitution, saying that the vote shall be a majority of those present, then that changes the situation. And an abstention would really be effective as a no vote. But that is not the case with ACB, because you go along with what Robert says and says a majority of those present in voting shall decide
mm-hmm.
a particular
mm-hmm.
issue.
Well, that effectively was where the problem lied, because the abstentions were effectively tallied as negative votes.
Right, and it was not supposed to be because of the way your constitution bylaws read.
Right.
But some other organizations, if they decide that, in their documents they say that it's a majority of those present, or a majority of those voting, or a majority of the entire membership, that's a qualified definition. And a qualified definition, abstentions and blanks will have the effect of a no vote. I don't know if I've explained it to you, but
so,
No, that's very clear.
If it says a majority of those present and voting,
That's not. That is not. That's an unqualified.
That is an unqualified. Okay. Okay.
And then,
great.
If an organization has something different, if they define their majority vote as something different from that, then that's a qualified vote, and the abstentions and the blanks will have the effect of a no vote.
All right. All right. Thanks.
Can I ask one other question?
Well, you know what? We need to really move on, Joe, because the lines have just been packed. Is that okay with you? I hate to cut you off, but...
Well, it's a real important one.
All right. Ask. You know what? Go ahead and ask it, and then we'll let you listen, okay?
It goes to the issue of tabling as opposed to postponing indefinitely.
Yes, sir.
And one of my, a split amendment was tabled last year, which effectively killed it. I was wondering if you would explain the difference between tabling and the necessity to bring a table motion back to the floor, say the next day or whatever, in the difference between that and postponing indefinitely, which has to be voted on by itself.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks,
bye.
Joe. Bye-bye.
Okay. I recall last year that someone did offer the motion to lay the pending question on the table. The chair should ask the member for what purpose does he wish to lay the question on the table. If that member cannot provide an urgent reason for laying that motion on the table, or if his purpose is to try to kill it, then the chair should not allow the lay on the table motion. There are many other motions that are more appropriate for postponing the issue to the next convention, or postpone it to a certain time, postpone it indefinitely, or refer it to a committee, refer it back to a committee. These are motions that are more appropriate as opposed to lay on the table. But lay on the table motion is very much misused in a lot of organizations, and they are only supposed to be accepted by the president if there is an urgent situation, and they, you take care of the urgent situation, and then you come back and take the motion from the table. And that motion can be taken from the table for the up until the end of the next meeting, and if it's not taken from the table in that time frame, then it falls to the ground.
All right. Hello there. You're with Don Stevens and Marlena. Who's this? Hello?
Oh, I guess I'm on. I'm sorry.
Yes.
My name is Matt Roberts from Orlando, Florida, and I just have a quick question for Mr. Stevens. Where can somebody get a copy of Robert's Rules of Order? I hear a lot about this organization is using Robert's Rules of Order, this organization is using it, but I've never actually read through it. Is there some way that a blind person can do that?
I'm glad you mentioned that. I understand the situation. I have not heard of any movement within our organization as far as producing the document in Braille. I wish there were. One alternative is that our organization does have a CD-ROM. The old book is on a CD-ROM. It is not audio. It is the way that you would have to download some of the parts of it through your computer setup. But I'm going to bring some order blanks out to the convention, and anyone that may, I don't know exactly where I'm going to put them, information desk or maybe somewhere else, if that's okay with the powers to be. And you can order those CD-ROMs and use your particular computer and the associated software to download some parts of it.
Great. All right. Anything else, Matt?
Well, the thing is, I won't be at the convention. Is there some other way that I can get a hold of this? Because I would like to get a hold of this. Is there a website I can go to or something like that?
You can go to the NAP.org, I believe is the you just do a search engine for National Association of Parliamentarians, and it'll lead you to the website. And within that website, there'll be some ordering instructions or at least a telephone number that you can call.
All right. Thanks, sir. Have
all
a good evening, everybody.
All right, Matt. Thanks a lot.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 866-666-7926. So I'm in my seat at convention, Don, and someone's made a motion, and I want to yell, or someone has requested a motion, and I want to say, so moved. Can I do that?
Well, I so move is one of the pet peeves of parliamentarians because of this particular issue. A lot of people get up and say, we need to do this. Let's just say an ordinary meeting, and somebody says, you know, our treasury's kind of low, and we need to do something to raise some money. Maybe we ought to sponsor a golf tournament, and that way we could build up our treasury. And then all of a sudden someone jumps up and says, I so move, and then someone seconds I so move, and the secretary is going to have to write down the motion. Now, what is the secretary going to write down?
Yeah.
You have presented a problem not only right. to the secretary of what they're going to write down, but you have presented a problem about what it is that the presiding officer is going to present to the assembly as far as what the motion is. So members need to give a little thought to their motions, and once they have the recognition, say, I move that. And then phrase your motion in as short a terminology as you can. A lot of organizations, particularly in conventions, will have slips of paper where they would write out, but this may not be appropriate for the American Council. But maybe that we can get the members to phrase their motions as briefly as they possibly can. Now, it's not bad to get up and say a few words leading into a motion. But Robert says you don't debate your motion before you ever move it. You can give a few introductory remarks and say, therefore, I move that, and then state your motion in precise terms, and then someone seconds that, and then away you go. The chair would repeat it, and then that motion belongs to the assembly, and away you go with debate.
Yes, because there is a big difference between stating a motion and stating a motion that sounds like a resolution, you know, well, because this and because that and therefore and you know, I mean, getting up and stating the fact of the motion and then the motion, I think is what you're getting to. And I happen to be secretary of our state organization, and we're a pretty active organization, and I often will say, what was the motion? You know, because you're absolutely right. You don't know what to write down. So,
well, you as a member would probably not want the secretary to write down something that you didn't say.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
You'd want to phrase it in the proper terms.
Exactly. Now,
well, you know, there are 5 points. Unless you have another plan here, I'd like to cover what I call power motions.
Well, you know, we've got a caller. Can we take this caller
ahead.
And come back to that?
Okay.
Hello, you're with Don Stevens and Marlena. Who's this?
This is Roger Peterson.
Hello, Roger Peterson. How are you?
And I want to say that I at one time served as parliamentarian for the convention before they had money to pay one. I served it for free, and they got their money's worth. But I just wanted to comment on a couple things. One is that it should be made clear to people that how you divide up your vote, how you divide up an affiliate vote, is strictly up to the affiliate. The convention
yeah.
has nothing to say
yeah.
about that. It's still possible for a delegate to cast the vote for one side, no matter what the people in the delegation think. And you got to deal with that in your affiliate. And the logic behind it, I mean, I've done that. I've cast the vote differently from the way the delegation sits. And the way you justify that is that you're representing the people back at home, as Don said. You're not just the people who come to the convention are not necessarily a representative sample of your membership, and it's up to the delegate to know that. But, you know, if the affiliate wants the delegate to, shall I say, religiously cast the vote according to the proportion of votes in the delegation, you can do that, but that's strictly up to the affiliate. The other thing I wanted to mention is about Robert's rules. By the way, it's Robert apostrophe S, I believe. It's not, in other words, the guy's name was Robert, not Roberts. He was an Army engineer at Presidio San Francisco. And I think that it's interesting to look at Robert's rules as a user manual for an organization set up, written by an engineer. And it, And the other point is that I'm aware that for a long time, the people that hold the copyright to Robert's Rules placed restrictions on its availability to blind people, particularly in computer form. And I don't know about you, but I don't want to sit up there and have 8 volumes of Braille or 20 cassettes to try to refer to. I need it in some kind of an electronic form that you can search rapidly.
Well, and Gary the board guy just came in and told me that the website is www.parliamentarian.org, and there is an online store. So maybe that's where you can look to see about the CD.
Yeah, that's good. Of course, it remains to be seen whether the form that it's in on the CD is accessible to it.
Right.
Okay, that's it, Marlena.
All right. Thanks, Roger.
Bye-bye.
All right, John.
Hopefully the format for that CD is PDF, but I'm going to have to check that out with the publisher of the CD.
Yeah, because PDF is much more accessible to us now with the new Adobe Reader 7. So, all right, parliamentarians, he said, www.parliamentarians.org. All right, so back to the point that you wanted to make.
Okay, members can shout some things from their seat. And those particular motions, I call them power motions. And the reason I call them power motions is because they stop the convention. They stop the matters of business right then and there. And those are things like point of order, point of information, question of privilege, parliamentary inquiry, and division. And let's go back to point of information. I believe your organization has pretty much adopted the custom of calling point of clarification. The point of information is technically what Robert says, and it's pretty much the same thing. If someone needs additional information about the subject matter or the motion, they call point of information. And they either ask the presiding officer to ask the mover of the motion, or they ask a question through the chair of the particular mover of the motion. Now, point of order is supposed to be called when you think a rule of order has been violated. Last year, there were some members that called points of order and then started debating a motion. Now, that is not quite right. It's not fair to the other members. But point of order alerts the chair to recognize you, and you need to be recognized for the purpose of challenging a rule of order. So do not use your point of order to try to get the floor and debate motions. Division. If you disagree with the ruling of the chair as far as the result of a vote is concerned, you have the right to call out division. That forces the chair to call for the vote by a different method, usually by a show of hands or a rising vote or something along that line.
So where we would normally, we always say, roll call, you're saying we need to be saying division.
Well, you can division, and sometimes that may force a roll call. Mm-hmm. Or if you just call division because you objected, you didn't think the chair heard the vote like you heard it, you know. But don't call it out like sometimes it's overwhelming, you know, and somebody that just was on the losing side hollers out division. That's what Roberts calls a dilatory challenge, and that can be ignored by the chair. The next one is the question of privilege. If you have something you would like to address or a policy statement, I recall some gentleman last year, I think he called point of order, and this was prior to the debate on some matter, and he was urging the chair to be fair in one thing and another. That's a question of privilege as opposed to a point of order. And then if you do not exactly know which motion you want to use, but you want to do something, you can call parliamentary inquiry and say, Mr. President, I'd like this. Can you help me phrase a motion, or what motion is it, or is this motion that I want to do in order at this time? So you can use these power motions to participate in these meetings and probably help everyone understand what's going on.
All right, let's bring this caller in. Hello, you're with Don Stevens and Marlena. Who's this, please?
Hi, Michael Malver.
Hi, Michael. Can you speak up a little?
How's that?
Yeah, that's better.
Just before people start shelling out money for Robert's Rules of Order, National Library Service has it.
Leave it to you, Michael. You would know that.
And probably RFB&D has. I mean, I would just assume RFB&D has it.
What form is that in, Michael?
What?
What format is that in? Is that in Braille?
I did a search through Kurzweil, so I only looked for Braille, but if they don't have it in tape, I'd be shocked.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's all I had. And then if you don't want to go here, Marlena, I totally understand, but last year was my first convention, and I'm wondering if we could take a much more bird's-eye view of this whole topic for people who are first-timers and may wonder, what is all this stuff about chairs and motions?
Sure.
And,
good question.
And could we just bring it to the new people as opposed to the people who've been here for 30 years and immediately want the fine-point procedure? I mean, that's important, too, and that's why you got a guest, which is great. But I wonder if we could step back and maybe tell the new people what we're talking about here.
So what is a motion?
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
What is
And I'll listen. I'll let you take it from here.
Okay. Thanks, Michael. Bye-bye.
Emotion is the primary business that gets organizations and groups started into debate. It is a particular matter that a person wants to be discussed on the floor to come out to arrive at some type of a conclusion. Charlie Harge alluded to something to this effect, that Robert's Rules is a system of rules that would help you introduce the business that you want considered by the assembly, and then the other rules help you eventually come to some type of consensus opinion or majority opinion of what was presented to the assembly.
All right, and when I'm really liking that Michael called with this question because, you know, he's absolutely right. The first-timers at a convention may not know what a motion, we've sort of talked about how to make one, but what is one, why do you make them? And obviously the chair is the person conducting the business. And is the chair always the president, Don?
The chair comes from a Greek word meaning in control or in power, and it normally is the president, but it really refers to the person that's there presiding. And I understand that there's an amendment to standardize and bring about clarity in the use of chair, chairman, and chairperson. And I believe when the debate is over and the final vote, then I believe all of this will be standardized and people will understand it a little bit more.
Yeah.
Basically, Chris Gray would be called Mr. President. If someone else takes the chair, the presiding officer's place, and it happens to be a female, then it would be Madam Chairman. If that person has the title, it would be Madam Vice President.
Okay.
So it depends on who is there. The chair usually refers to the position, the place of power in the convention, which is the presiding officer at that time.
Okay. And if there are any other new folks who... new in terms of not having been to a convention, and you want to call in, please don't feel, as I said in my show promotion, there is no question that shouldn't be asked here. Democracy is the cornerstone of our organization, and it is so important that we all at least have a bit of a working knowledge of what that should be. Also, I want to remind people that there are at least two first-timer sessions happening at conventions, so even if it isn't your first time, feel free to go to those sessions and get some of this orientation. Are you planning to participate in those sessions, Don?
I hope so. If that want me to, I would certainly do that and cover a lot of things we're covering tonight and as a refresher for some who've already heard it or for first time for those beginners. And I would certainly be available to do that because I will be at the convention around 6 o'clock July the 1st.
Ah, great.
And I'll be there through mid-afternoon on the 9th.
And I think it's very important, again, to emphasize that no one is trying to structure or squelch debate and business, but rather to make the facilitation of the organization's business something that happens smoothly and on a plane in which everyone knows what's going on and doesn't get surprises.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's the focus that we as parliamentarians, when we have workshops, are trying to do, is not dictate to them what they've got to do, but try to help them participate more effectively and understand better what is actually going on.
Well, as we wrap up here, Don, any points that we haven't covered that you want to make sure we get in on this broadcast?
I think basically we've covered most of them, Marlena. You had mentioned continuation or whatever, if you're going to wrap it up, whatever, but I'm available, and my time is y'all's time.
All right. Well, it seems as though the phones have quieted down, and you'd probably like to end your Sunday evening and have a little bit of Father's Day time.
Oh, I've already had that today. It was very good.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Well, I am very much looking forward to seeing you in Las Vegas. And I appreciate that you came on the program, and I appreciate everyone who called into the program. I think that this was a good opportunity for people to ask questions. If people want to get a hold of you prior to the convention, may they do that?
Oh, certainly. I will give them my email address. It's very simple. It just reverse my name. It's Stevens Don. And my Stevens is spelled Stevensdon at bellsouth.net.
Okay, that's Stevens with a V, Don, at bellsouth.net.
Correct.
Well, thank you, Don. I will see you in a couple of weeks.
Looking forward to it.
Have a wonderful rest of your Father's Day.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. We'll be back in just a bit for the second portion of the program, which I didn't advertise because I was so excited about having Don on. I'd like to talk about travel tips and tricks. We did this last year a couple of weeks prior to the convention, and it was quite a popular topic. If you've called in during the first hour and you want to call in during the second, it's a whole new hour. See you around the corner.
Oh, what did Delaware, boy? What did Delaware? What did Delaware, boy? What did Delaware?
She wore a brand new jersey. She wore a brand new jersey. Wore a brand new jersey, that's what she did wear.
One, two, three, four.
Oh, why did California, why did California, why did California, was she all alone? She called to say how are ya, she called to say how are ya, she called to say how are ya, that's why she did call.
Uno.
Mississippi boy, what did Mississippi, what did Mississippi boy, through her pretty lips? She sipped the Minnesota, she sipped the Minnesota, she sipped the Minnesota, that's what she did sip. Oh, where has Oregon, boy, where has Oregon? If you want Alaska, Alaska, where she's gone? She went to pay her taxes, she went to pay her taxes, she went to pay her taxes, that's where she has gone.
Ein, zwei, drei, vier.
Oh, how did Wisconsin?
sin, boy, she stole a new brass key. Too bad that Arkansas, boy, and so did Tennessee. It made poor Flora die, boy, it made poor Flora die. You see, she died in misery, boy, she died in misery. Oh, what did Delaware, boy, what did Delaware? What did Delaware, boy, what did Delaware?
All right, so that was a stretch. That was a stretch. I always try to find music that kind of bridges us from where we were to where we're going, and all right, I admit. But I didn't have any kind of music about parliamentarians, you know? So I figured, well, the next thing is states. So there you go. That was Perry Como and Delaware. And, oh, gosh, I don't think that's the right line. Let's see. No, it's not. So we're not going to answer that line. All right. All these bells are going off, confusing me here. The telephone number to call is 866-666-7926. And we're open forum here for the next, well, I don't know, 50 minutes or so, 50 minutes. Love to have your calls because you don't want to listen to me talk for 50 minutes. It was great to hear from Charlie Hodge tonight. Charlie, if you're listening, I'm glad you called in. You know, the Board of Publications is an extremely important arm of the American Council of the Blind. And Charlie, if you want to call back and talk about the BOP a little bit, that'd be great too. Or any other member of the Board of Publications, love to have you. Next week on Marlena, we are going to talk with Rebecca Hobson with the National Alliance of Blind Students. And I hope I'm saying her name correctly. Anyway, she is going to come on and talk to us about the NABS program. I think the NABS group is such a wonderful group. They really, you know, they work hard every year and they provide a great service with that newspaper. We've got a call. Let's bring them in. Hello, caller. You're with Marlena. Who's this?
Good evening, Marlena. It's Ray Campbell from Illinois.
Hey, Ray Campbell, a veteran Marlena show person.
Yes, yes. I liked it so much last week, I thought I'd call back in this week. That was a great first hour.
Thank you.
Really was, it's interesting to learn all the things that we haven't maybe done as correctly as we should, and that. I wanted to start the travel discussion off a little bit.
Yes, please do.
A couple things, especially for some of the new people. I think we're going to have a lot of new people at convention this year, and if you've traveled sparingly by air or if you have not travel at all by air, or not traveled since 9/11. It's just a couple of things that I'd recommend to folks. One would be to really heed what the airlines tell you as to how far ahead you should be at the airport. If it says 2 hours, then that's what you should try to do, is be there 2 hours ahead. And it's really, I think, especially important for those of us who are blind or visually impaired that might need some assistance, because sometimes it takes a little while to get meet and assist people to come and to help us to our gates and things. And especially the first part of convention is going to be 4th of July weekend, and that's going to be a busy travel time. And travel's back up again, and a lot of people are traveling, so really heed that. You know, you just save yourself a whole lot of headaches by making sure you have the time to get through security and all that stuff. And hey, you know what? If you get through it early enough, you stop and grab a sausage McMuffin or one of those little places in the airport.
Some of that good airport junk food, right?
Yeah, something like that. And the other thing I would say too is, and this is just really important, and it's especially important and especially at the end of convention when you've had a long week and everything. It's really important to be as nice and polite as you can to people. My mom always said you get more with honey than you do with vinegar, and I think it's You know, we've all maybe snapped at somebody or something because we're a little tired and had a long convention. It's like, hey, the meet and assist people or they're trying to do a job try to be as courteous as you can be and stuff like that. And I think a third point I would make is, and I know Cynthia mentioned this in the forum, but I'm going to reiterate it here, is put something on your suitcase so that you can spot it. Don't tell them it's a black Samsonite soft cider bag because there are probably 1,000 of them. And first of all, your name should be on it. With an ACB luggage tag,
That's right.
But something that you clearly can distinguish your bag. I will never forget, about 8 years ago, just after Karen and I got married, we went to the Bahamas, and we went down there, and we didn't have anything unique on our bag. And we had one of these Samsonite black soft cider luggage. And my brother was, like, having all kinds of trouble trying to find it. He's like, you know, Pete, there are a million bags like this. He said, we're going to do something about that before we go home. And all they did was put a piece of red handkerchief on it. And when we got back to O'Hare Field in Chicago, they could see the bag come out of the chute, grabbed it. It was beautiful. It worked out just fantastic.
Yeah.
So just a few things for folks to think about. And happy trails and happy trip to the convention.
Yeah, I know. It's just like, what, 2 weeks?
12 days.
We
leave in 12 days. I know that.
Well, we leave in less days than that, and I'm too slow to figure it out. We're leaving on Wednesday.
Oh.
We're going to go really early. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I always tease Gary, the board guy, and tell him, you're getting old, so we'll go early so you can recover from the travel, you know. So we're looking forward to it. So we'll kind of be there by the time everybody else gets there.
Well, you'll have the hotel. We'll see what you do, Marlena. You'll have the hotel all figured out.
That's right.
I'll just call you when I get there Friday. The heck with exploring.
That's right.
Give you a call and you tell us everything.
That's right. I'll give guided tours the Marlena way.
Probably for a fee, right?
Of course for a fee. I got to make a buck
with
somehow.
With all going to ACP. All right.
Well, this is great. And listen, I hear Karen in the background. You tell her she needs to call me some night.
Okay. Well, I'll let her call the next time.
All right. You let her call the next time.
Okay.
All right. Take care, Ray.
Good night.
Night. 866-666-7926. Some really good travel tips from Ray Campbell in Illinois. Ray Campbell's just one of my favoritest people. He and Karen both are just delightful, delightful people. Who they are is how they are. And that's what I love about them. And we've got a caller. Hi there, you're with Marlena. Who's this?
Hey, Marlena, it's Matt again. I hope it's okay to call back in again, but I got some travel tips for your listeners.
It sure is.
I won't be at the convention this year because I can't afford it, but I definitely will be there when it's in Jacksonville.
I bet you will.
A few things. One thing to keep in mind, if you are on medications or you have things you're going to need right after you get off the airplane, do not pack them in your luggage because you may get there and your luggage may not.
Yes.
So it is important to have all of your stuff that you're going to need right away with you, especially your keys. I know a situation one time where somebody came back from a trip and they packed their keys in their luggage and they got back and their luggage didn't get there, so they didn't have their vehicle keys or anything.
Oh no.
Oh yes.
Oh my gosh. Do you do much traveling, Matt?
Yes, I do some. I travel at least several times a year with and without my guide dog. You know, one thing, my guide dog is on medicine, so I got to be sure that her medicine is with me at all times.
Yeah.
Because in case the luggage doesn't get there, I have her medicine with me. Also, when it comes to dog food, people are like, well, how are they going to carry all this food, you know, food for a week or food for whatever? What I do, if I know I'm going to be gone for more than a few days, I will carry a few days of dog food. I'll separate it into meals in Ziploc bags. And then once I get to my destination, I will buy her some food at that point. But at least I have food that I can use to get by till I can get her some.
Well, and this year, as in years past, Guide Dog Users Incorporated has a deal. I wish I had the contact information. I don't. But there is a pet store that will be filling orders for your food and bringing it to probably the guide dog user suite.
Right.
And so folks can do that as well. So
that's wonderful. That's a wonderful thing, because if you're going to be gone for a week, but you still need to be sure you've got food when you get there at least a couple of days. What I would do if I was coming, I would take like maybe 3 days and just take, because my dog eats twice a day, you know, two meals a day, like six small Ziploc bags of food.
Yeah.
All I got to do is dump it in the bowl.
Yeah.
I would recommend that if it's going to be a long trip, well, whether even if it is or not, you, of course, I'm sure every guide dog user knows this, but it's good to remind, be sure that you limit your dog's food and water intake before flying, especially if it's a long trip.
Yeah, that first step's a killer.
Yeah, I know. And something else I discovered also is, I don't know if this has ever happened to you, but I know there have always been times when I've traveled and I've thought to myself, how am I going to know that when I leave and I get home, I will have remembered to grab everything? Well, I came up with a technique. I went to an event one time, and I had to take stuff out. I couldn't leave everything. I couldn't live out of a suitcase for 3 days. So what I did was I said, you know what? I'm going to pick one drawer in this place, one drawer in this hotel room, and when I get ready to leave, if that drawer is empty, I've got everything.
That's a great idea.
And if it won't fit in one drawer, use two drawers. But make sure that you have that, you keep your stuff in as small of a place as possible, so when you check that area and you discover that it is not, there's nothing there, you've got everything.
You know, a couple of months ago now, I interviewed Ronnie Millsap. And before he came on live, we were chatting, and we were talking about sort of staying organized when you travel and stuff like that. And Ronnie said to me, you know, I go to these places, and they think they're doing me a favor by giving me these huge suites. And he said, the problem I have as a blind guy is I just have too many unknown places to put my stuff.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
So that's a great idea.
Yeah, like I said, I went to a conference one time and I had to wear dress clothes and everything else, and I just took the dress clothes out and I laid them in a drawer, you know, folded them, of course. And the morning that I was getting ready to leave, I checked the drawer, nothing there. Okay, I checked where I had put the, you know, the important stuff in the bathroom. Okay, that's all. I keep all that stuff in a Ziploc bag, and I keep my dog's medicine in there too, so I don't lose that, because I did that one time. So I keep everything I need, like that medicine, toothpaste, everything, her medicine. If I have to use medicine, I keep all that in one Ziploc bag. And that one Ziploc bag stays in one place. And then I pick that Ziploc bag up, I've got everything.
Great
idea. And what I do with the guide dog's leash and harness, if it's with me and I have an extra bed in the room, I lay that stuff on that bed, because in case of a fire or in case I have to get out fast, I know exactly where it is.
That's, you're now where I was just about to go. I have two places that I try always, one or the other, to leave her leash and harness. One of them is on the back of the door. And if for some reason that doesn't work, the other one is on the bathroom door. And the reason why I choose those is because inevitably the bathroom door is very close to the door.
Mm-hmm.
And so for just what you're saying, but you know, there are sometimes, Matt, you know, I come in, I'm tired, maybe I've had a couple of glasses of wine, and
right.
I think, oh, I can remember. So I put them in a new place. Man, am I messed up. I can't find them.
No, I always put that stuff on that other bed.
Yeah.
Because I keep my leather, because what I do is I have a leather vest that I wear all the time, too, and I keep that with them. So her leash, her harness, my vest are all right there on the other bed. And if I can't do that, then I keep the harness and leash on the floor next to my bed up against the wall.
Yeah.
But you have to do that, because I had a situation, what I also do is if you're in a hotel, do not put, you know, when you take off your clothes at night, don't pack them, because you might have a situation in the middle of the night that you might have to get out quick, and you're not going to have time to look for clothes.
All right.
So what I do is I keep whatever clothes I took off, I put them in a certain spot. And this happened once. We were at a hotel one time. My parents and I, we were in Las Vegas, and the fire alarm went off, and I thought, oh, boy, I'm going to have to get out of here. And ever since that time, I realized, keep close where I can get to them, because if that fire alarm goes off, then you're going to put, you know, throw the clothes back on, get out the door, because you don't have time to play, especially if you're in a high-rise building.
Yeah, and we don't want you going out with no clothes on.
Exactly.
It could be scary.
By the way, you did a great job the last hour. I really enjoyed that. And this is actually the first time I've really listened to your show, but fortunately the wireless internet is working and the phone is working, so.
Well, I hope you'll come back and listen again.
I will.
All right. Thanks, Matt.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
866-666-7926. If you called in the first hour, feel free to call back in the second. Hi there. This is Marlena. Who's this? Okay. Well, I guess that person didn't want to speak. 866-666-7926. We're in open forum, and we're talking about this and that and travel tips. We're just sharing a little bit ago that we're going to have a representative from NABS on next week, National Association of Blind Students, one of the ACB special interest affiliates. And I think these guys are just great. I mean, the service that they provide with the paper, I can't imagine now going to a convention and not having my morning paper there. I just can't even imagine that. If you don't know what I'm talking about, NABS students in their fundraisers will deliver the ACB convention paper to your room daily for a fee. Hi there, this is Marlena. Who's this?
This is Kathy.
Hi, Kathy.
How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
Oh, not too bad.
I understand we're going to see you in Las Vegas.
Oh, yes, we will be there.
Great.
And we're going out Thursday.
Oh, okay. Thursday. All right.
And we've got a crazy schedule. We've got, we're going out Thursday, and we're not going to be able to stay for the whole thing. We've got to leave on Thursday. We've got a wedding to go to. Frank's niece is getting married on that Saturday. So we will not be back. We'll be coming, leaving Las Vegas on the, on the 7th. And so we won't be there for the banquet, but we'll be there for a good chunk of the week, though.
Oh well, it's too bad you won't be there for the banquet, but I'm not going to say why. I'm not going to spill the beans, but well, maybe you can listen.
Well, I don't know. I hope so. We're going to be in Philadelphia.
Oh, well, I'll tell you why after.
Oh.
After the convention.
Oh, after the convention. Okay. But one hint that I could add to the things that everybody's been giving is, what I usually do is I bring an extra, my own personal bar. It sounds, I think, silly, but my own personal bar of soap.
Oh, that's not silly at all.
Because we went to Florida, when I was a kid, and used the soap in the hotel, and I broke out. And I said, that's it. For now on, I'm bringing my own soap.
Well, I don't know anything about what this particular hotel provides, but I do know, having traveled extensively, that you really take your chances, because most hotels sort of provide, you know, the lower end of the soap and the shampoo, and so, yeah, that's totally not crazy.
No, I mean, I know shampoo, I always, you know, bring my own, but some people, they just use the hotel soap, and after what happened to me, and it was, I think it was supposed to be Safeguard soap, but I don't know, I broke out with it, and I said, oh, that's it, I'm bringing my own soap.
Well, some people bring their own pillows.
Yeah, I've heard that, too, because they were allergic to,
whatever,
hyperallergenic, whatever it
is,
but, so you're going out Wednesday, so that's good. Well, a friend of mine, my ex-supervisor, lives out there. And so I gave her a call and said that we'd be coming out, so we're going to try and meet up with her, and she said, let me know, and we'll give you a tour. So kind of hoping to be able to do that Thursday or Friday before things start in earnest on Saturday.
Well, make sure and look us up.
Oh, we will.
We always have time for you and Frank.
That's good, and I'll definitely do that, since you're going to be out there by the time we get there.
Yeah.
And, Well, we're looking forward to it. I know that.
All right. Well, see you in a week or so.
Okay.
All right. You Thanks,
too.
Kathy.
Yep,
bye-bye. 866-666-7926. Can you believe I forgot the phone number in the first hour? I did it. It's, oh, golly. I think all that parliamentary stuff had me rattled, you know. I so move. No. But really, that was a wonderful first hour and lots of good information shared. Hi there. You're with Marlena. Who's this?
This is Margaret Johnson again.
Hey, Margaret.
And I think you went over this once before, but I don't think I got it till another program. But these people that have laptops and all kind of computer equipment, when that stuff is X-rayed, does that hurt your programs or anything in there?
No. Uh-uh. Nope. If you, that's a really good question. If you have a laptop and you're carrying it on with you, you have to take it out of the case, and there are bins there at the security area, like little plastic buckets, and you'll put your laptop in the bucket and it'll go through and get X-rayed, and it's fine. But rarely have I been asked to take out my Braille note. So for some reason, Braille is okay, but laptops, they got to see them all.
Uh-huh. Does that go for Pac-Mate and stuff like that?
Well, I've never carried a Pac-Mate, but I would bet that it does, that if they don't ask about the Braille note, they probably don't ask about the Pac-Mate. And even if they do, like I used to have a Braille light, and one time I got stopped, and this was before 9/11, I got stopped because the battery in the Braille light was so big that they wanted to know, what is this? But all you have to do is reasonably explain to them, look, I'm blind, this is my personal data device, and I always offer to turn it on for them and show them, you know, a little bit about how it works, and they usually say, nah, it's all right, fine. So, no, but it doesn't, the X-rays don't hurt anything.
Okay. Well, I don't own one, but boy, I sure wish I did. I love those Pac-Mates. And, and I just thought, now I want to know this, but unless I might be lucky one of these days to have one, and I just wanted to know that. So,
no, you're okay.
Okay, great.
Oh, all right,
we'll see you at the convention.
All right,
and one more thing.
Yeah.
I will say, I did help collate the Braille programs one year at the communications room. In fact, it was last year.
Oh yeah.
And that is a big job, and I learned to rip those things apart.
Oh,
you know?
I know that bursting. Isn't that fun?
And that is very important to get them collated right. And we told some of the people, look, if you're having trouble doing it and if you can't read, because there's each newspaper has about 22 pages. And so I wanted them to, the ones I did, I really checked to see if they were right. And I might not have been as fast as some people. You'd be surprised how fast some of those people can rip those pages apart, you know, in the fan.
Oh, I know. I didn't do it last year, but I did it the 2 to 3 years prior, you know, each year. And, boy, sometimes we're up till 2 and 3 in the morning. And I'll tell you what, when you're ripping those little thingies off the paper at that hour in the morning, you're just crazy. It's crazy.
Well, we got through last year shortly after midnight.
Yeah, you guys
I have my husband this year, and I don't know if I'll be doing it or not, but it's fun to do it if you have a partner to work with, you know.
Yeah.
And my friend's not going to be there this year, and I'm bringing my husband, and I don't know. I guess it's not that big a deal to collate the print ones. But it is
no.
A big deal to collate the Braille.
Yeah, and it's a lot of fun, too. I mean, I can't remember all the people I was doing it with, but I know Gene Mann was in there, and Frank Pacheco, and Terry Pacheco, and
uh-huh.
Sharon Lovering, and, gosh, Marcia Dresser,
yeah.
And Steve Dresser, and, I mean, we just, it's like a party.
It is, and, you know, they come through, you know, the NABS people come through, after midnight and get boxes of them.
Yep.
And I don't know who provided, but it was nice that we had treats. They gave us treats when we got through.
Yep.
You know, potato chips and stuff like that. And I appreciated it because we did work pretty hard, about 3 hours a night is what I worked in there.
Yep.
last year.
It's a lot of fun.
Okay.
All right. Well,
good to talk to you.
I'll see you in a week or so.
Yes.
All right.
See you. Bye-bye.
Take care, Margaret. Bye-bye. 866-666-7926. Next week, I'm going to write the darn phone number down so I don't forget it myself. Let's see. Now, some travel tips. Okay. Survival in a hotel. Now, these are just my opinion, you know, and so take it for it. It's worth what you paid for it, okay? But survival tips in a hotel. Well, I personally don't travel without a slate and stylus. And one of the reasons that I say that is the voicemail in most hotels, if it works, which frequently we knock voicemail out in hotels, but the voicemail...
Hello, Marlena?
Hang on a second, Ron. The voicemail doesn't always work in hotels, and so it's great to be able to leave a Braille note for someone. Hi there, you're with Marlena, and this is Ron, isn't it?
Yeah, Ron from Kent.
How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing fine. I'm sure looking forward to the convention.
Yeah, it's going to be great, huh?
Yeah, yes, uh-huh, and I have travel tips for those, and I hope they've made reservations, but if they haven't, you know, at the Riviera, they should bring an extra $100, you know, because you have to have you can't get out of it, you have to have a deposit of $100, you know, they require it, because I guess too many people have stiffed them. And you'll get it back at the end if you haven't you know, like used room service or you know, use the phones or anything. And when you use the phones there, and this is every call too, it's a dollar, you know, for the first 3 minutes and 21 cents a minute there afterwards.
For your outgoing calls.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's best to, you know, bring your cell phone.
Bring your cell phone, that's right.
Yeah.
But turn it off during the meeting. Turn that darn cell phone off during the meeting, right?
But, I mean, other times you can, you know, have it on.
Yeah,
but I thought those are the two, you know, travel tips.
Well, those are good ones.
Because, I mean, I was kind of surprised. But, I think the ones that, if they've called in and made their reservations, I think they know about it already, but this is for some of the people that don't know about it.
Well, my guess is if people haven't made their reservations by now, they may not be able to get one. I don't know. I don't know if there's still rooms available, but I bet everybody's made them, don't you think?
Probably so.
Yeah.
And another thing, will there be a Braille map of the hotel or you know, like the things of the surrounding area to, you know, so I could study?
Well, there usually is information on kind of what's around you. I mean, in Las Vegas, all you have to do is walk out the door.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like, you know, we're sort of off in a place. I mean, you walk out the door, you turn left, you turn right, you cross the street. I mean, there's something, it's just everything is all around you. Have you ever been to Las Vegas?
I've been through it. I've stayed one night going and, you know, one night coming back, or I went to the NFB convention in Phoenix, Arizona in 1984. But, well, we just stayed a night.
So you never really experienced it.
I never really experienced it, but I'll experience this year.
Well, you will, and it's a city that is, at least where we're going to be in the downtown area, it's never dark.
Okay.
At night, the lights are so bright that it looks like daylight out.
Wow.
So, yeah, it'll be cool.
Yeah, and one more thing, like about the you know, you'll be having a suite. That'll be open most of the time, won't it? And
I don't know whose suite you're talking
about. The Washington Council of the Blind.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, you need to just drop Cindy an email and ask. Yeah, yeah. I could talk about a lot of things, but I'll let Cindy talk about that. How's
okay,
that?
Okay, well, thank you. I'll see you down in Las Vegas.
All right, I'll see you in Las Vegas.
Bye.
Okay, take care. 866 866-7926. Now let's see, where was I? Oh, hotel survival tips. Ron makes a good point. You know, you got to get those reservations, man. Make sure you got those reservations in. Hopefully you all have. So I don't travel without a slate and stylus because I think I've seen ACB take down voicemail systems. I mean, we just schnocker them. And then you can't get a hold of anybody, you know. And, yeah, you can hook up with them. You get their cell phone. And then, yeah, that's fine. But until you do, if they are a Braille reader and you're a Braille writer and you can't write Braille, it's so darn frustrating not to be able to leave that message. So take a slate and stylus with you or some way to write. Hi there, this is Marlena. Who's this?
This is Jeff Bishop.
Hey, Jeff Bishop.
How are you?
Oh, my gosh. I'm okay. It's hot in this room, though. How are you?
I am fine. I'm out and about.
It sounds like you are. Where are you?
I'm down at my in-laws.
Well, hi, in-laws.
Yeah, they can't hear you. But
Well, forget it, in-laws. Let me tell you what Jeff said about you the other day.
Oh, that's great. That's good. We'll hear that on replay.
Mr. Jeff Podcast Bishop here.
I missed your guest, though.
Well, darn it. You'll have to listen to the replay.
I wanted to find out. Did you ask him if there are copies of Robert's Rules available electronically anywhere?
Yeah, listen to the replay.
Oh, okay, you won't tell me then.
Actually, my good friend from Minnesota, whose last name I know I'm going to say wrong, Michael Malvery. Gosh, I spent the day with him last Saturday, and I still can't say his last name. Anyway, he did a Kurzweil search and found that they're on Web Braille, and so I'm sure that, you know, they're available on cassette as well through NLS. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, well, how are you?
Well, you know, I'm taking a deep breath, and this reminds me, I'm just going to take this opportunity.
What do you want now?
No. I sent you all my requests earlier today. But just because taking a deep breath reminds me, we're going to take the month of July off from the show. And, you know, we'll be gone. The third will be at the convention. The 10th will be coming home.
Right.
And so we're going to take the month of July off, and we'll come back the second Sunday in August.
But we won't have, we'll have main menu, though.
Well,
we're not taking that off.
Oh, no. We'll have, that's not my show.
But it's my show.
I know. So tell people about it.
We'll be doing main menu. And one of the things we'll be having on in a few weeks is an interview about the iPod Shuffle from a wonderful lady who wrote a book for National Braille Press. And we're still working on, she lives in Hawaii. And so.
Is that Anna?
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, she's wonderful.
Yeah. So I'm working on determining a time. because it's 3 hours earlier, it's kind of an odd thing because, you know, I'd rather it be the other way. It's easier to schedule that.
Well, we'll just get Hawaii to change their time so that it's easy for you.
No.
Oh.
I just need to do something different. I don't know what we're going to do quite yet. Our schedules are just not syncing up, but we're working on that. So that's something that's coming up and got a lot of other things planned. So we're going to have a lot of coverage from the convention, too. So.
Yeah, you're going to be producing main menu all throughout the month of July, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, because we're gonna let Dave off the off
gonna
the
travel around the world
the pressure seat. Yeah, he's going to travel around the world. Isn't
I
that
know.
Great?
Yeah.
Man, I wish I were traveling around the world.
I know.
I'm going to travel around Seattle.
Yeah. Oh, and then I had an opportunity to work with the Bits Group yesterday.
Ah.
And we worked on setting up a podcast for them.
Cool.
And so those of you who are Bits members, you want to keep an eye on your mailing list, and you might see some interesting things concerning coverage from convention.
Cool.
That's all I will say.
Very cool.
But they were elated when I showed up in a chat room just to say hello to Roger Peterson, and they were like, "Ooh, you're the podcaster guy." And I spent the next 2.5, or like 2 hours working with him on podcast stuff.
Oh, that's great. Well, don't forget to link them to Blindcast.
Yep. We will. Yeah. I think actually they're going to kind of keep this feed sort of private because it's going to only be intended for for their members.
Well, maybe we'll beg, borrow, and plead.
Yeah. Talk to Rob.
Yeah.
Maybe he'll allow us to publish it somewhere. You know, I'm officially not a Bitson member, but because I helped them, now I can read it.
Yeah, that's cool.
So,
that's cool.
And I will become one. It's just I haven't done it.
Yeah.
Because I don't have a way of doing PayPal, or else I would have done it.
Oh, yeah.
See,
well,
everything should be electronic. There should be no reason why ACB, all affiliates, should have PayPal-type payments. You know?
Well. That would be nice. We'll put you in charge of helping people set it up.
No, that's quite all right. I'm already in charge of it for one affiliate. I don't need to be in charge of it for another one.
So Jeff is officially offering. No.
Send your email to Marlena
right.
at acbradio.org. Exactly. Yeah.
And I'll forward it on. Don't worry.
Yeah, I'll set up a rule.
All right, Mr. Jeff. Well, you get home safely.
All right.
All right. I'll talk to you soon.
Yep. Take care, everybody.
All right. Say hi to the in-laws.
I'll do it.
All right.
Bye-bye.
866-666-7926. My good friend, Jeff Bishop, who helps me immeasurably. I couldn't even begin to tell you all of the help that Jeff provides to me. And I just so appreciate his help. All right, so back to hotel survival skills. Now, so I don't travel without a slate and stylus. I also usually do not travel, although I must say I've been guilty of this, of not following my rule here of late. I don't know why. I think I don't know. I'm a slacker. I'm a slacker. But I usually don't travel without rubber bands or scotch tape. Now, why rubber bands? Well, all the hotels, of course, you know, we're supposed to have Braille on the door and supposed to be able to identify your room by the Braille on the door. Well, we'll talk about that in a minute. Hi there, this is Marlena. Who's this?
Well, hello. Good evening, Marlena.
Well, hello, Stan.
Yes.
I just as I said it, I thought, oh, is this really Stan? How the heck are you?
Oh, I'm doing just great.
It is lovely to hear you.
Well, it's I'll tell you, I'm sick of this weird weather we've been having, but you know, summer will get here.
Well, we're having great weather.
Not here.
Oh, you need to come north.
Isn't this weird?
Go north, young man, go north.
It's been a strange year, but I'll tell you, it's been wonderful in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Last time we spoke, I was in the midst of running for the Rogue Valley Transportation District Board of Directors.
Yeah.
And I won by a very good margin.
Woohoo! Good for you!
And there were people who did not want not only one blind person on the board, but there were two of us elected to the board.
You're kidding.
And really, it was a wonderful day.
Oh, that's great. That's fabulous. So what does this mean now? What do you have to do?
Well, what it means is we're trying to work hard to make sure that we can get both paratransit and regular public transit running smoothly and try to get it to be more efficient. And we're working on that and trying to make sure that we have a good accounting of how the money's spent.
Wow, that sounds like a big task.
And it is. And of course, we're just getting ready to do the budget, which means I have a great big binder full of stuff to read.
Now, do they provide you alternative format materials?
Not with some of the things. With some of the things, they're very, very slow about doing it.
Hmm.
And so what you have to do, at least if some of us have, you know, the reading machines, we can go listen
sure.
to are speech synthesizers,
yeah,
but
yeah.
What I may try to do is bring forth that little device and to tell them about this little CD reading, you know, device that to make it easier for them to publish.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And, you know, because at least if they could do it on Daisy CD that's playable in all,
yeah,
you know, sorts of different CD players, maybe we can get them to do it. You know, a synthetic voice would be better than nothing at all.
A synthetic voice beats no voice.
You know.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
so.
That's true. So, Stan, what do you, do you guys grapple, oh boy, this might open up a can of worms, but.
Go ahead, open it.
We're almost through with the show anyway, right?
Right.
I'm really brave. I do the hard stuff at the end. Do you guys grapple with the question of blind people using paratransit?
Yes, but I will tell you, I answer it in one way. Because a lot of people don't, that gets into the idea of if you don't want ADA concerns to be dealt with a paratransit, and if you don't want these things to, don't accept federal money.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to go, then you go realizing that if you're going to accept federal money, there are going to be strings attached.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those strings deal with ADA and paratransit.
But there are some people who feel that blind people should not use paratransit.
Well, then they can go and work to abolish the ADA.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we're just using rules that are there for us to be able to deal with. And, you know, I play hardball on this.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to have this, because what we ran into here was the idea that paratransit was taking away from fixed route service. And actually, there are separate pools of money that are dealing with that are very complicated and would put people to sleep if they heard them.
Mm-hmm.
But that's my feeling on the issue.
Mm-hmm. Do you think if a blind person lives on a bus route, that they should feel free to use paratransit?
I have mixed feelings on that, because for the simple reason that cars are getting quieter and quieter.
Yes, they are.
And because cars are getting quieter and quieter, I mean, I hope this doesn't offend anybody, but it could be a case out there of bowling for blinks.
Gosh, Stan, only you.
And I'm proud of it. Only me, yes.
Bowling for blinks. I see. Okay. Well, and if they're over 50, you get 10 points.
Oh, no. I'm over 50. Oh,
yeah,
no.
Yeah, but if you knock them out when they're over 50, then you don't have to go through all that Medicaid shtick. You know
but
what
you
I'm
know
saying?
What? The thing is, I don't believe in being politically correct. And if we can just not take life so seriously,
yeah,
it does help.
Yeah. Yeah.
If I offended anyone, well, sorry.
I don't think you did. I think the listeners to my program are really wonderful people. And
I know they are.
Gary just heard it on the air. He's in the other room laughing. And, you know, people understand.
I mean,
so.
I think that's an issue that we have to concern ourselves. We do have the issues of cars getting quieter and quieter and roads getting more congested and we have to think about that, too.
Yeah, yeah. And my issue out here where I live, you know, when we bought this house, and, of course, Gary's a wheelchair user, so buying houses is not, it's not easy to do. But when we bought this house, my little street out here that the bus goes up and down was, you know, a two-lane street.
Sure.
And it was easy to cross. There's no light, but it was easy to cross. Well, within a year, they made it, not only did they make it a three-lane street, which you would say, well, that's not a big deal, but they cut down all this huge carpet of foliage that acted as a sound barrier because we live very close to the runway,
yeah,
at SeaTac. So they took that away, and they put in on the other side of our street, although although it is covered by landscaping and we don't see it, but they put in a warehouse. And so now we have these Mondo 18-wheelers coming up this three-lane street and the plane's going overhead and there's no more sound barrier.
Well, see, and that's an issue because that is something that takes away from, so it makes an issue that may have seemed simple very complicated.
Yeah. Yep. I tried to get them to put a light out here. They wouldn't do it. I did get them to put sidewalks on either side of the you know, they were going to put like an 18-inch walking lane. So I invited the folks from the city to come and blindfold themselves and or sit in the wheelchair and measure themselves from left to right and walk along that 18-inch.
Well, you know, and you and Gary face really competing issues when you think about it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you want nice, noticeable curb cuts.
Yeah.
And, of course, if they're not cut very well, you could, you know, get in a situation where you don't notice they're there. Yet Gary would have a problem if the curbs are too high, making it difficult for his wheelchair.
Yep. We certainly bring a bag of issues to the table.
Well, anyway, I just figured I would touch bases with you because I haven't talked to you for a while.
Well, I hope you'll call me again and again and again.
Well, I will do that.
All right.
And you have a nice, pleasant rest of the weekend.
You too, and have a good rest of your Father's Day.
Thank you very much.
All right, Stan. Bye-bye. Oh, he's such a nice guy. That's Stan in Oregon. It's 52 minutes past the hour. If you call in pretty quick, we can take one more phone call. In the meantime, I'll go back to some of my hotel survival tips. So, why a rubber band? Well, you just don't know how readable that braille is going to be on those doors. And some hotels, oh my gosh, they put the braille, you know, 3 feet away from the door. And so you're looking, and, you know, if you're like me and you've been on the convention floor all day, the first room you want to visit when you get into your room is the one that is right close to the door. You know what I mean? And I want to get in my room as quickly as I know how. Thank you very much. So sometimes putting a rubber band on your door lever is a good thing to do as well. Let's see, the Scotch tape. Well, that's what I do when I do need to leave a braille note for someone. I put the note over their key lock. So when they, especially if they're a blind person, when they come to the door, they go to unlock their door because they maybe need to go to that same little room that I'm talking about going to, the first thing they see is my braille note taped onto that lock, and they just pull it off, and there it is. Some other hotel survival tips that I do. And again, these are just things that work really well for me. I always introduce myself to anyone from the hotel staff with whom I come in contact. So even the bell person, you know, who helps me with my bags, when we get to the room, I give him a tip, and I tend to tip $2 for each bag. I don't know if that's cheap or generous, but that's, unless the bags are really heavier, I have a lot of them, then it's more than that. But I will say to them, thank you so much. I appreciate your help. And my name is Marlena. What's yours? And that makes them feel really good that, hey, this is the person seems to be nice. And so you kind of strike up that sort of relationship. I do the same thing if I deal with the front desk face to face. And I always do it in the restaurants. Always, always, always. I will be sure that the server knows my name so that if the server wants to talk to me, the server can do that and use my name and not say, hey, you, you know, or this lady over here. Now, another good tip in terms of hotel survival, wear your convention badge as much as possible because your convention badge has your name on it. And while blind folks could care less about what your convention badge has to say, it sure does make it easier for the server people. And it sure does make it easier for the folks who are sighted who may need or want to speak with you if you have your name on. So let's see, there's that. And Matt touched earlier on this, but boy, I just want to emphasize it. Keep things compact. You know, the tendency is, you're going to be here a week, man, spread out, you know, make yourself at home. Well, every time I spread out and make myself at home, by golly, I leave something. So keep yourself as compact as you can. Keep your organization in your room as together and compact as possible. In terms of things that I do for wayfinding, and you know, you veteran convention goers, you're like, yeah, you're preaching to the choir here, but maybe there are some new folks who haven't had a lot of experience staying in a hotel. You know, when you get off the elevator at your floor the first time you go, ask the person assisting you, are there elevators facing each other here? And then kind of pay attention to which way you turn when you get off your elevator and how many turns you made. Did you pass an ice machine? Did you pass the sound of an air duct system? At the Los Angeles Marriott, one year I found my room at CSUN by listening for the fluorescent light in the hall that was just before my room. So all these little tips and tricks. And I think that's about all the ones that I had on the top of my head for today. And we're just about out of time. So I hope that you will come back next week. And again, after next week's show, we'll be taking some time off. We'll be back the second Sunday in August with new and improved stuff, we hope. But I'd love to hear from you with constructive criticism, comments, anything that you would like to share. It's Marlaina, M-A-R-L-A-I-N-A, at acbradio.org. And, hey, we'll see you next week when we'll have as our guest Rebecca Hobson from NABS. You've been listening to Marlaina on ACB Radio. We'll be back next week, same time, same place. But in the meantime, if you've got an idea for a future show, why not drop me an email? The email address is Marlaina, that's M-A-R-L-A-I-N-A, at acbradio.org. Thanks to Dave Williams, director of ACB Radio, and most of all, thanks to you, the listener. See you next week.